Bitcoin is up 2,000%.
You don't need to get fancy with it.
2,000%.
Higher.
How high?
Going much higher.
It's not going to be a one-way straight line to, you know, Bitcoin at $2 million. But it's going to trend in that direction very, very heavily.
The central banks are seeing themselves in the mirror, and they don't like what they see. Panic is setting in.
This is a sovereign debt crisis. We can all see it. It's blatantly obvious.
Christine Lagarde promises that a CBDC is coming.
They realize their days of money printing can only fuel the Bitcoin revolution.
They're going to do what they always do, what they've done time and time again, and what more and more people are figuring out.
Just buy and hold. That's what I've been doing. And look at me. I'm Max Kaiser.
We have a response to this hole in one. We're trying to do various golf tournaments.
We've got some serious business going on. I think we've got a
Lawrence
third microphone over here, too.
The author of the instant classic, The Big Print.
Now you got to go get the book.
Get the chair.
There we go. We've got
that guy is boring as fuck. He's just always trying to squeak out 0.1% more.
There you go.
Just buy Bitcoin and shut the fuck up.
There we go.
That's the only thing you need to do. You don't need to get fancy with it. Just buy and hold. That's what I've been doing. And look at me. I'm Max Kaiser. That's what happens. Am I right? I'm right.
There we go. We got the legend.
Now, where is everybody?
Max, where are we going now, man?
We're going higher.
How high?
Going much higher.
Much higher.
Because the panic is setting in. The central banks are seeing themselves in the mirror, and they don't like what they see. They see a leech. They see a parasite. They realize their days of money printing can only fuel the Bitcoin revolution.
There we go. Big print is coming, right?
The big print is coming.
There he is. Where is he?
Come on aboard.
Yeah, we're trying to find him. There he is.
There you go. Have a seat.
The big print. Here we go.
Have a microphone. Here's the book. Yeah. Here's the drink.
The best part of the book is the foreword, though.
The foreword is excellent, I must say. Lawrence, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Nice to see you, Max.
Congratulations on the success of the book. You mind if I steal your chair?
No, you are fine, my
friend.
Right. You are fine. Well,
we've got the big print
coming here.
Woo!
And I want to hear Max Kaiser and Lawrence Lepard rip on the big print. Is it coming quicker than you thought, Lawrence?
It's a little hard to say. You know, nobody knows exactly when. The strains are all there, though. The Japanese bond market falling apart, that's certainly a big
Yeah, night. I think this is the straw in the wind. You know, this for 20 years, Lawrence, we've been talking about the yen, the Japanese bond market, and how it fits into the global Ponzi scheme.
Right.
And it's very slow motion train wreck. I'm not sure people fully understand the interrelationship between the Japanese bond market, the yen, or what's called the yen carry trade,
yep,
and the big print. Can you connect the dots for us?
I'll try. I mean, the bottom line is, as we all know, is that fiat is a Ponzi. And of course, as you pointed out years ago, Max, you can't taper a Ponzi scheme. And the biggest source of cheap fiat for many, many years was Japan, where they had 0% interest rates. And so people would borrow in yen terms, and they'd use that money to get yielding assets, and it was a carry trade. And that all worked great as long as, you know, the yen interest rates were low. But what we're now seeing, and it's a really notable move, I mean, it's almost gone parabolic, is that the long bonds in Japan, the 30 and the 40 year, are really starting to hockey stick up. And from, you know, almost sub 100 basis points, they're now in the approaching 400 basis point range. And so to me, what that indicates is that people are losing confidence in the underlying strength of the Japanese currency. And they know that just like America, Japan is going to have to print. They're going to have to print massively.
Right. I mean, just to get into the technical a little bit. So when you say that people are short the Japanese yen or selling the Japanese yen, just so people understand the mechanics of that. So in other words, if I want to raise a bunch of money and I want to take that money and I want to invest it somewhere, I can go to Japan and I can sell short yen. I can sell yen in the open market short.
Right.
And the reason why I would do that is because the interest cost on my short sale is unbelievably low, like
right,
almost less than 0.1%.
Right.
So therefore, Japan becomes the least expensive place to borrow money.
Correct.
So you're borrowing money in the form of selling yen in the open market in a margin account as a short seller,
right?
And you take the cash, and if you put it into the U.S. Treasury market yielding 3 or 4 or 5%, you're making a positive cost of carry. Okay,
right.
That's where they come up with the term carry
trade. Okay. Correct.
So now, if you look at the global market of all these fiat currencies, every country has a different interest rate. And so at the bottom, though, for decades, has been the Japanese yen.
Correct.
So the
Japanese yen
becomes the base layer of the global Ponzi scheme.
Correct.
And so what we're seeing now is an unwinding
of
this global Ponzi scheme. So interest rates or the cost of borrowing are going up. Tell us what instigated this reversal in Japan.
Well, I think a couple of things. First of all, Japanese inflation has been going up, you know, and the yen has been weakening, I believe, over time.
All right, full stop. So for decades, we've heard about the lost decade in Japan.
Right.
That they were suffering from deflation.
Right.
Okay, now we hear that rice is up 100%.
Right.
And that's a big component of the inflation index in Japan. So at what point did the script flip? What precipitated the flip?
You know, I think it was COVID, and I think it was just the change in the U.S. and everywhere that we've moved from a deflationary world. 40 years of deflation really flipped. I mean, in March of 2020, the U.S. 10-year briefly traded for 50 basis points, and then it reversed, and it reversed hard. And in my view, what's happened is we've gone from a 40-year deflationary trend. We now live in an inflationary era. And the reason for that is that finally, more and more people have come to understand what you've always said, you can't taper a Ponzi, and that is in a system where money is debt and debt must continually grow because you have to create debt to service the interest on the old debt, you have to grow the money supply. And so they were able to mask the inflation for 40 years, Max, as you and I both know, through a lot of beneficial things. I mean, they had shale oil, they had the China, you know, people working for pennies and other things that helped create a fake sense of deflation, but all the while they were still growing the money supply at 7 or 8% a year. And that the fact that the money supply has to continue to grow is finally being recognized by more and more people, and that's leading to more and more people recognizing that they have inflation and that we will have more inflation. And of course, that's the thesis of the book, that the Keynesian model is a lie. And it, by definition, requires inflation, and then by further definition, it has to get worse,
right,
like any other
Ponzi
scheme.
Let me ask you this. So there's two different ways of deflation manifesting itself.
Right.
But one example that you're giving would be shale oil revolution was brought the cost of energy down through fracking, as it's known, or you had outsourcing of labor to China, which obviously reduced labor costs in countries like America by 90, 95, 96 or more percent. Okay, but getting back to Japan for a second, and I want to ask you this question, that I'm just thinking about it, talking to you right now. Is it possible to create artificial deflation? And what I mean by that is it possible on these low interest rates in Japan to be caused by, and you know, what we call naked short selling, where the financiers out there are just selling trillions and trillions of dollars worth of futures contracts to borrow against, but those futures contracts don't really exist in the market.
Yes.
Is that possible?
I think it's possible. I think it's highly likely.
Then isn't that ultimately the straw that broke the camel's back? Because at some point you run into a situation where the market cannot withstand, there's a limit, I guess. Is that plausible?
I think that factored in as well. And it's hard to tease these things out, Max, and to know which of these factors contributed the most.
So it's like a reinforcing illusion where the deflation due to the labor and the fracking, et cetera, it gives confidence to the financiers to go dump a bunch of Japanese yen futures, right?
Exactly.
And we're going to borrow against this and do this. And so it becomes excessive. It becomes ultimately what you see in a Ponzi scheme.
Right.
But it's a very, very sophisticated Ponzi scheme.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But nevertheless, it is.
Oh, it is.
Okay.
It,
so if it's broken
yeah.
and the Japanese yen is the canary in the coal mine.
Yes.
And now we're seeing a reversion to the mean.
Yep.
And we're seeing interest rates now are getting ahead of anyone's prediction where they're going, right? Every financial pundit out there has been wrong.
Yep.
And they continue to be wrong.
Yep.
They're not going down.
No,
and just in the last week or so,
yeah,
the bond market has looked horrible, right?
Yeah, the bond market's totally horrible. And this must be just Scott Bessent's worst nightmare.
Right?
Right, because he thought that, you know, we put some more tariffs on, the stock market will fall, and we'll catch a bid in the bond market. Briefly, they do, but then the bonds just keep marching higher.
Right. And he says stuff like, well, we're going to stimulate the economy by, you know, not raising rates or maybe lowering rates. You know, it's the supply side economics theory that's not has
well,
never
and
worked.
What's very interesting is, of course, the Trump administration started off with Doge, which was a noble effort, but eventually they had to pivot. And as Lynn pointed out, you know, they've now gone to, okay, well, let's not worry about Doge. We're going to outgrow it.
Right.
Well, the only way to outgrow it is to have GDP go up faster than debt. And the only way GDP can go up faster than debt is either we get an enormous productivity increase, i.e. we get fusion tomorrow, which isn't going to happen, we get total AI tomorrow, which isn't going to happen, or we inflate the underlying currency so that the GDP number gets bigger, even though the number of goods and services provided does not get bigger.
But there's another paradox here, because if you try to grow the economy, you have to do CapEx. You have to borrow.
Right.
And your interest, your borrowing costs are going up.
Are getting higher, yeah.
And the interest on the borrowing is going up.
Yeah.
So there, you don't have room
to
borrow.
You're crowded
even
out.
To grow
the
economy on that side either.
Yeah, that's another great point. That's another great point. Yeah.
Right?
So, what the book points out, and once again, thank you so much for writing the brilliant foreword to the book. What the book points out is that they are trapped and all roads lead to monetary debasement. They just do.
Right, so let's talk about the timing of all of this because, you know, the bond market having a fall has been the widow maker for 20, 25 years.
I know.
You know.
I know.
Because they always come up with some way to extend and pretend.
Yep.
But let's say the timing, and I think the Japan market is telling us that this is the end.
We're close.
So
we're
timing,
very close.
The timing of your book could be, you could have nailed it.
Maybe.
The one guy out of 10,000 who actually got it right.
I don't know about
might
that.
Might be Lawrence Lepard.
I don't know about that.
And so, correct me if I'm wrong, but just to repeat what you just said, there's only two paths. One is, well, because you ultimately are destroying the dollar. So if you don't want to destroy the dollar, you would have to allow a lot of these bonds to go belly up.
Right, and that would be a depression or 1929.
Right? 1929.
And they're not going to let that happen.
Deflationary depression.
Exactly.
Which they're not going to happen.
They're not going to let it happen.
Right. So they're going to print.
They're going to do what they always do, what they've done time and time again, and what more and more people are figuring out. And that's why sound money is absolutely crushing bonds. I mean, since 2020, Bitcoin is up 2,000% measured in sovereign bond terms. 2,000%. I mean, and that's because sovereign bonds are down 60% and Bitcoin's up, you know, 10x. So it's just, you know, this is a sovereign debt crisis. We can all see it. It's blatantly obvious. Will there be zigzags? Sure. And as you point out, there will be times when they do things that make us think we're wrong. And it's not going to be a one-way straight line to, you know, Bitcoin at $2 million. But it's going to trend in that direction very, very heavily. And as you also pointed out, this Japanese thing is a real canary right now.
Now, in the past, what we've seen is a lot of collusion with the central banks.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so the Fed will say, we're engaged in quantitative tightening.
Yeah.
But the European Central Bank will ramp up printing.
Right.
So, and on a global basis, there's never not been a time of massive of inflation of the money supply.
Yeah, they take turns printing. And as we know right now, China's printing massively because they had a real estate collapse.
Right.
And we also know that they do printing that they don't call printing. I mean, let me give you an example.
Yeah.
They go to Japan and they probably say something like, you buy our bonds and then we'll give you a cheap swap line to give you the money to buy our bonds with.
Right.
There are all kinds of things that are going on behind the scenes that more or less represent monetary debasement, but we can't see them because they don't want us to see them. Another good one is the SLR, which is the supplementary leverage ratio, which limits how many bonds the banks can buy. Well, they've already hinted that they're going to eliminate that. So effectively, they're going to enable the banks to do QE, which is really what they did in World War I, where they said to the banks, hey, buy these Liberty bonds, and we're going to give you money cheaper than the Liberty bonds. You're going to make a positive carry.
Right.
They're going to do the same thing here.
So, and Bitcoin, therefore, they never saw it coming.
That's right.
Because that's the escape hatch, as
right.
Christine Lagarde.
Well, some of them kind of do see it coming, but they don't want to. They certainly don't want to admit it because it takes away their privilege.
Well, was the first sign of all this back in Japan, like last August, when that carry trade, just the raising of the base of the interest rates by 25 basis points,
yeah.
Send the shockwaves. Was that sort of sounding the alarms?
And yes, that was the first step, but it's only gotten worse. I mean, that chart, the charts on the Japanese interest rates are just stunning.
The best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and Canada is the Bitcoin Well. You could go to the bitcoinwell.com/greencandle and sign up today, and they will give you Wishing Well tokens. They are one of the only exchanges in the United States that will give you free sats every time you buy Bitcoin. You have a chance to win 1 million sats every time you buy. You get Wishing Well tokens. You flip the coin down the wishing well, and you have the chance to win 1 million sats. You heard me here, folks. 1 million sats. And on top of that, they have the absolute best over-the-counter service where you can make purchases over $50,000. And they will walk you through the whole thing. They have the best rates in the United States and in Canada. And on top of that, they have the best white glove service where they will take you through those giant purchases just so you feel comfortable. You'll get it in cold storage, and it's strictly non-custodial. They are saying, we want you to experience the true power of Bitcoin and that self-custody. So go to the well, sign up, bitcoinwell.com/greencandle today.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm gonna help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign. Back to the show.
I mean,
we'll in Japan, what do they call it? Yield management or yield?
Yield curve control.
Yield curve control, YCC, right?
Yeah, right.
They did that last year.
Yeah.
But it didn't work.
Right.
Maybe, I think because of the presence of Bitcoin.
Probably.
And so now nobody believes them if they're going to say and try and do it again,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're going to have a Liz Truss moment. They're going to have to do it again. I mean, bottom line, and the great advantage that all Bitcoiners have, in my opinion, is that we understand something that's absolutely true, it's almost mathematically true, and we also understand the way the system is constructed, and there's no way for the system to stop what they're doing. And so, you know, we know where it's going. Now, the thing we don't know, the thing that's tough, and it's been tough for me because I've been fighting this battle for 40 years, as have you, is we don't know the zigs and the zags, and we don't know how fast. You know, I sleep well at night knowing that my kids are going to be completely financially secure because the things I own are going to go up in value an enormous amount.
Hi.
Hey, Stacy. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no, I was sitting right off there waiting for you guys to call me up on stage, but you guys were talking.
By the way, I brought you both signed hard copies of the book. I also brought one for President Bukele. I hope can give that to him. That would be nice.
I have it right there.
Yeah.
Hopefully nobody steals it.
Right, so finally, let's talk about gold. So gold is not absent from the party.
No.
So it is waking up.
It's analog sound money, and it's the second best to Bitcoin. Bitcoin's going to crush it in terms of alpha. But as I always say, you can't print gold. You can't print Bitcoin. And so for my 80-year-old clients who don't want to have a 50% drawdown, some of them own gold, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And it's not going to go up as fast, but it's not going to lose value. 8 billion people know that it's got value. And, you know, Bitcoin will ultimately demonetize gold. That will happen, but not tomorrow. There will be plenty of time to make the transition from one to the other.
How's your book doing? Is it selling well?
It's doing well. We sold 25,000 copies.
Wow.
Yeah, which I don't know. In book terms, I don't know if that's good or bad.
That's really good.
That's really good.
Yeah. And,
yeah. Wow.
Yeah, but to be frank, I mean, I'm going to, you know, I'm always a half empty kind of guy, being an old boomer. we got to get it to the normies. Bitcoin people like it. I appreciate that. And I love all the support. I'm very thankful for everyone who's bought it and recommended it. Success will come when we get onto the mainstream media platforms and, you know, Tucker and everyone else. You know, we got to get the rest of the world, Max. You know that, right? And that's why I wrote it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Know? Well, it's true. But, you know, you can lead a horse to water.
Well, that's
but
right.
But you can't teach him to surf.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us here on the Bitcoin Sports Network podcast. And are you on stage at the main event?
I'm not doing a speech. I think I'm on a panel with a couple of guys, and I'm happy to do that. And I'll be hanging around signing books. I brought as many books as I could realistically figure out logistically, about 300. So if you want one, see me on the first day, because I suspect I'll sell out. And, you know, they're available on Amazon. So.
All right. Well, buy them and then leave a review. That's the problem. I'm going to have to buy one as well. I know you gave me a signed copy, but in order to get a proper Amazon review, I have to buy it.
Once again, Max, thank you for the forward. I'm deeply appreciative.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was a joy to write and easy to write after I read the book.
Yeah,
I realized immediately that there was a gap in the marketplace, and the book fills it brilliantly. It's a general interest, general reader.
Yeah, the Bitcoin Standard is a better, deeper, more fully researched book.
Yeah.
But a lot, I give it to people and they don't always read it. I've tried with this to make it readable by everybody, and that was the goal.
Huh.
Definitely. I like all the explanation of memes in the back. You know, he gets into the memes, how do memes work and meme. You don't find that in the Bitcoin Standard, safe. Only in this book do they go into the memes. Very important.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Lawrence, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, so I guess we're going to continue on. I'm going to come over here. We're going to stay on stage, Max.
Okay.
Me and Max are.
Oh, okay.
Let's do it.
See you guys.
See you.
Right.
We're going to stay.
People.
We're going to stay on stage.
People that need people.
So the biggest conversation I've been having is with people who have been the players.
Yeah, what are they saying?
They all say that, you know, our food at the Max's Asia Golf Invitational was exceptional, right? Compared to nowhere is going to be able to compete with the Max's Asia Golf Invitational because we have Chef Rick, right?
Self-custody can be a daunting task. That's why I've partnered with Bitbox. They have the best hardware wallet. They make it the easiest to put Bitcoin in self-custody. So go to bitbox.swiss/greencandle today and use promo code GREENCANDLE and you can get 5% off your entire order. They make it so easy, all in one. You could get the hardware wallet. You could get their punch plates. You could do it all right there on that website to make the self-custody experience the easiest it can be. So visit bitbox.swiss/greencandle. Use promo code GREENCANDLE. Get 5% off your entire order and get your Bitcoin off an exchange into self-custody today. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show. My favorite thing about Bitcoin is meeting Bitcoiners in person. That's why I'm so excited to tell you guys about what is going on June 14th down in beautiful Tampa Bay, Florida. That's the Sound Money Soiree paired with Bitcoin Day. They're bringing a full day of great talks with amazing speakers like your boy here. And we're topping it off with a black tie event just for you and bring in that hot lady friend. We had Bitcoin cross 100K. We're all getting girlfriends, folks.
So come on down to beautiful Tampa, Florida. And if you use the link below, you will get 10% off your entire order, whether you want to go to just the Black Tie event or Black Tie event plus Bitcoin Day, you'll get 10% off using the links below. Also, if you're thinking about going to BitBlock Boom in April, if you're going to Vegas in May, or if you're thinking about going to Prague in June, use my promo code GREENCANDLE for all of those. You'll get 10% off your entire order. And come bug me. I hope to see you guys very soon at one of these great in-person events. Enough for me. Back to the show.
Yeah, Chef Rick brings the goods to the buffet line. And of course, it did very, very well. And it's become an international sensation. I'm already losing my voice.
I don't think you need to shout so loud.
I can't stop.
That's your style is to just shout. So we just landed in Vegas and we literally came straight here.
Yeah.
From the plane. You've already been given a whole bunch of hats. It's really
good. Hats, we got books, we got swag. You know, we're cooking already on day one. It's not even day one. When does the conference begin?
Tomorrow. But it's like a, what do they call it? It's like the whale business side. They meet with important business people.
Yeah, that's like, day one, yeah.
Yeah, we're not on that day one.
No.
We're on the final day.
Yeah.
At 12:30, and that's a good slot to have because.
Yeah, definitely. 12:30, we're on. And, you know, the Bitcoin Sports Network is doing a great job in expanding all their events all over the world, really. They got this one here in Vegas. We got the Max and Stacy in El Salvador. They've got, I think, another one in Nashville.
Yeah.
And we're looking to do one in Panama now because Panama is becoming a hotspot.
Oh, yes.
For Bitcoin sovereign adoption.
Yes. Meyer Mizrahi, who is the mayor of Panama City, he's here in Las Vegas right now, and he's going to be on stage with us. He's been messaging me asking where we are and what are we going to do tonight. And
yeah, he knows where all the good restaurants are.
Yeah, but usually we're in bed and asleep by like 8 o'clock.
And Chris and Frida, of course, have once again, it looks like a huge success here. Place is really popping. It's happening. Here in Vegas, everyone walking out when we were walking in earlier seemed really happy and smiling.
Well, the interesting thing to me is how the Bitcoin is becoming such a deep and rich culture of its own, right?
Yeah.
Like compare like this to that first Bitcoin conference in 2011 in Prague when there were 20 or 30 sort of people with autism and Tourette's there, all the coders. Me, you, Simon Dixon, and Pierre Noisa from Paymium. And, a lot of people are talking about Pierre because his daughter they just tried to kidnap her in Paris. So this is a big issue of security around Bitcoiners. But, wow, like, It's literally insane that everything keeps on happening in France like that.
Yeah, the security issue is becoming more and more important for sure. And France is, you know why? Because there's a lot of shit coining in France. So it tends to warp the mind. And it breeds a lot of depravity, depraved people.
Well, as Bastiat, the great French statesman, said, when plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men in a society, across the course of time, they develop for themselves a legal system that justifies it and a moral code that glorifies it, right? So this makes sense in a Europe that prints money relentlessly, where Christine Lagarde promises that a CBDC is coming so that they can control more of what you do and what you say and what you spend your own money on. And of course, France is the ultimate of socialism in terms of plundering the other taxpayers to gimme, 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 right? So it would make sense that they would just think it's fine. That guy has a lot of money. and I'm going to take it from him.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's great points, really, is that the Bitcoin, as it gets more and more popular, you know, it exposes these other competing ways of doing business, and you see them in a new light, in the light of perfect money, in the light of Austrian economics, in the light of Bitcoin. And the French model and the European model of socialism is looking worse and worse in a lot of ways, because there was never really any competition. They would be very snobby and say that, well, you know, we might be in debt and we might not be making much money, but we get free health and free schooling and things like that, which of course is not free. It's just moving the board, the shell game, moving the shell around, and it doesn't really result in any kind of sound economics. The debts keep on getting higher. And now it's reached an inflection point, as it always does. Whenever a country engages in runaway money printing, it always ends in some kind of catastrophe, right?
Yeah. Or, you know, I'm just because I spoke about France and about all the kidnappings or attempted kidnappings of Bitcoiners there, I did think of Brigitte Macron punching the president of France today on the plane. I mean,
I know this inside story is that Macron actually, he sold his Bitcoin last week. So his wife punched him in the face and said, Chakra Blue, you idiot. Why did you sell our Bitcoin?
Probably. That was a bit of a surprise. But yeah, so I think that the award ceremony is happening. That means that it's time for Max to get up on stage, start to dance, start to show people their award. So thank you for joining us. We're going now.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guest. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me.